If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Point of view
on Kaya 959,
on the street, on the air.
So obviously today, quite a big moment for the government of South Africa, where the president signed into law the NHI bill, and so it is now an act. So I just thought it's important for us to be familiar with it. I know lots of commentary out and about there, but I'm not sure we all quite understand what the NHI bill and now act actually seeks to do and is, and what it means for you and I. So I've got a panel here. I will speak to one of them at a time, but I want to start here with Dr. Vuyisi Mzukwa, who is a medical doctor and SA Medical Association chairperson. Dr. Mzukwa, thanks so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and to your listeners, and thanks for inviting me.
Just high level, your reaction as the medical association to the signing into law the NHI.
Well, our views are known to the South African public, and we obviously have concerns, as we raised before, and our legal team will be assisting, you know, with clarity in the courts of law.
So you are one of the entities that is looking at going to court to challenge this. What will you be challenging? I know that you're saying your legal team is looking into it, but, you know, what do you think you would be prioritizing in the number of things that you've raised?
Well, I think it's the access to healthcare. That would be the main issue. Because if we, for example, if you're saying medical aids, especially Section 33 that talks about the role of medical aids, and I mean, you tell me if we have a problem similar like the UK, where they've got a backlog of 7.8 million of surgeries, you know, that is done from 6 months to 1 year. We think that it's a limitation, you know, to all of us, you know, because you need to have access to the system when you need it, you know. So to have no alternative now, to be looking at a failing government. I mean, you look at whatever they are touching, it's falling apart. So why would the healthcare system be spared? You look at recently issues of corruption on NSFAS and everything else. So what would give us that trust to the system? So we need to have an alternative, like we do with education. We run to private if the government is failing. You know, where buildings don't have windows and children are going to pick toilets.
I'm going to bring in Siviwe Khahube, who is a DA Chief Whip as well. They're also considering their options. Thank you so much for making time for us, Siviwe, and welcome to Point of View.
Good evening, panel, and good afternoon. Good evening to the listeners of KFM.
Well, a lot of sentiments have been thrown around the NHI. You've been quite vocal as to say that you don't believe this is going to be a vehicle that's going to give universal access to South Africans. Then what do you believe NHI is?
So, look, I mean, I think it's very important, Pamela, I think, that for us to differentiate between aspiring for universal health care and aspiring to essentially fulfill Section 27 of the Constitution. I think you would be hard-pressed to find anyone in South Africa who doesn't believe that the current healthcare system is inadequate and certainly needs to be improved and certainly needs to be invested in. And so moving towards universal healthcare, where everybody can have equal access to quality healthcare, is important. It's a global notion, as the president mentioned this afternoon. But we've got to differentiate between what the National Health Insurance Bill, which will become an act, versus what universal healthcare is. Because the bill has been a bill that was drafted by government as a vehicle to obtain universal healthcare. But it is not in itself the attainment of universal healthcare, where the problem comes in. Our view is that the bill in its form is badly drafted and is only going to give rise to essentially a worsening healthcare system. One, there was no, so these are the three key sort of themes around this bill which we believe are a problem. Number one, there was absolutely no mention or intention of essentially investing in the healthcare system. So effectively, what you are saying is you are opening up to 60 million South Africans to rely on a system that has not been invested in. Everywhere you go, whichever province you're in, you can see crumbling infrastructure at hospitals, vacancies in terms of doctors and nurses. There were striking doctors the other day who are saying to government, please place us in positions. So there's been no investment. There's been no readying of the system. Number two, you had a pilot project, which you rolled out at hundreds of millions of rand, which failed. It, by all accounts, all the indices said your pilot has failed. But then instead of saying, where do we fix where we've failed, you then, as government, decide we're going to roll this out at a national level. The problem with this is that creating an SOE of 300 billion rand a year, Pamela, while it's going to be open to looting and corruption and the like, the problem here is that it's not like an ESCOM or a DENAL where we can somehow, you know, roll it back. These, we're talking about people's lives. We get this wrong, and essentially we are playing and gambling with the lives of people. So that it's important to differentiate between wanting equal access to quality health care and saying that the NHI will be the vehicle. We believe that the bill in its form is not going to achieve that, and there's been a lot of populism used around the bill, saying to people, you can walk into a Mediclinic now after this bill has been enacted. We must be so careful about gambling with people's lives just only because it is in an election period.
Ayabonga Cawe is author of Economy on Your Doorstep and also an economist, listening in to both my guests as well. Ayabonga, thanks for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for the invite, Pamela, and good evening to your two guests as well.
Your take on some of the points that have been put forward by our two guests, and many, you've heard many others as well out there. Your take on whether this is actually not really going to be giving universal health care to South Africans.
So thank you so much, Pamela. And maybe, I guess I come to this very tangential, and I think a lot of my interest is certainly on the kind of funding elements of it, but also I'm quite interested in how in the public discourse, to the point Viwa just made now, has kind of, one, been overly simplified, and also secondly, I think there's a lot of scaremongering and a lot of at times justified despondency. But I think we're also missing what the fundamental civic distinction is between a law and a series of regulations that give effect to some of the principles outlined in that law. And I think a lot of the criticisms that we're hearing, be it in the ones that Budumzugis has raised, Section 33, right through to some of the many other criticisms, where's the infrastructure, you know, what role do you envisage for the private providers and the funders of private healthcare? And I'm not sure to what degree that discussion is engaging with some of the regulatory making power in Section 55. It seems to me, if I read Section 55, that it kind of frames the possibility for some engagement to determine the relationship between the fund and different medical schemes providers, different healthcare providers, which certainly to my lay mind does open some wide ambit for engagement around some of the intricate details that many people are saying is missing from an act. And I'm not sure that that's the purpose and function of an act.
Viwe, you've pointed out earlier on that you will be looking at challenging this in court, looking at two central points. And one is just the content of it. You don't believe that this mechanism has got enough in it to do what it says it will do. And number two, you are also challenging the process. You're saying that there wasn't enough engagement, there wasn't participation by the public, and you want to challenge the process thereof. Let's maybe start talking about the process that you want to challenge. You are in Parliament. What is it that you didn't feel was adequate in the way in which the process took place?
Yeah, thanks, Senator. If you would indulge me, I just want to just respond to one element that Ayabonga mentioned. about perhaps things that are missing from the Act, which can be contained in regulations. I think, for instance, the powers of the minister are very clearly defined in the Act.
I was going to go there. I wanted to clear the procedural issue quickly, and then I think there's a lot of time to talk about the meat of the matter. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So on the procedural matters, one of the things that, in fact, the main issue is, of course, this was introduced back in 2019 and has now been signed into law now in 2024. And in that time, Pamela, there was extensive public participation process. And I won't necessarily place the blame entirely on government on this. And I think there's a lot of work that Parliament ought to do when it comes to looking at the public participation process in general and its efficacy. So the big problem here was that there was extensive consultation. In fact, I sat in on this committee for many years where we went around the country asking people's views on the legislation. There was a lot of people who were not even aware of what the legislation was about. But again, as I said, I don't put this blame on government. That should be the function of Parliament, to go and inform people in a nonpartisan way what legislation is about. But the big concern here is that there were many industry experts, academics, medical professionals who made inputs orally and in written form in Parliament. And none of the things that they were raising that were of concern to them have seemingly made it into the legislation in a meaningful way. So the piece of legislation that we have before us right now is literally the same legislation that we had in 2019. And our view is that, well, it makes a mockery of the process. Why then should we expect industry experts to make inputs in legislation-making processes when we don't even take their considerations into the lawmaking process? There's a number of pharma, for instance, the South African Medical Association of Doctors, who have come out quite strongly about this. And I know for a fact that they were one of the organizations that made inputs. One of the things that medical professionals also raised, Pamela, was that in the pilots that the government ran, they were never paid. They were never paid within the 30 days, and a lot of them pulled out, and that's part of the reason why those pilot projects failed. So none of those things we can see now, after all of that process, we can see how it's been tweaked, how government has listened, and it just would seem that this, for me, this act has just now been rammed through, whether or not the industry wants it or not, whether or not people are on board about it or not.
All right. I want to just quickly take a call because I think, you know, there's room for somebody to respond to this call. Sivio, I'll come back to you. I'll come back to you as well, Ayabong, as well as Dr. Mzukwa, so that you can all have a chance to respond and go deeper into this. Mpo is calling from Limpopo. Mpo, good evening and welcome. Thanks for calling.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for calling. Mpo, go ahead.
I'm good. I'm sure you're supposed, I'm listening to you guys from the audio bouquet. Okay. This is what I think this bill will do. It will help some of us, like some of us, especially those who are not working. You know, I've got a 12-year-old son whom only 2 months not going to school because of lack of hearing aids. Because he had a hearing aid when he was six. And then we applied for them 2 years back to say he must get a new one because this one was dying. He was using one because the other one was dead. And now the other one is also dead. So he now he doesn't go to school in 2 weeks because he can't hear. He doesn't have hearing aid. And he's been waiting for how long? They say that long, hearing aid. It's been 2 years. And one another hearing aid. He can't hear. So he can't go to school. For me to get him hearing aid, control medical aid, and then give me some more about then he can get a medical aid. He can get hearing aid for 2 months, 3 months, early medical aid, because it's 6,500 for hearing aid. And so now I'm not working. I don't have that kind of money. I have to wait for the government. It's been 2 years, and now they've died on him. So it's been 2 months and not going to school and writing during exams. So you see that maybe this bill will help in terms of the dialogue or some things in the emergency, like hearing aid or operations and stuff. If we can go to private clinics, then we'll be able to get them. Because now, you know, the way even that the government, come query a lot of government demonstrated the process, 2 years. But if you can go to, maybe you go to Med Forum or this private clinic, it won't take you even more than 3 months, 2 months, 1 month. Once they check, they measure them, he'll get hearing aid. So I think they will work for a number one. If you got medical aid, the people will complain or why about our medical, but if you are not working, but we know the pain that it takes for overwhelming something for this long. Now that my son can't even go to school in 2 months because he can't hear without the hearing aid. And it's been 2 years waiting to receive the bill. Sorry.
Thank you for that, Mpo, because I want to come in with Dr. Mzukwa here, because, you know, earlier on, Dr. Mzukwa, you're saying everybody knows your position, but let's, for the benefit of those who are not clear on your position, here's an Mpo who says, look, I hear all the conversations going around, and they do seem, for many, quite elitist, actually, those who are against the NHI. And what's your response to that?
Well, Pumelo, I think we need to clarify this thing. The NHI fund is not, it's just one aspect of the, you know, the many pillars of the healthcare system. Healthcare system is made up of leadership and governance. It is finance. It is medicines and technology. It is human resources for health service delivery. You could also put infrastructure in there. So you are now addressing just one aspect, the finance, and you are forgetting about all other six that I've mentioned. And this is a huge problem that we have, because some of the problems that we have is ethical leadership and governance, you know, that we've been struggling with. I mean, if really we think we can have a system that works, why isn't the current system not working? They will tell you, no, it's because we don't have enough money. But we know that there is so much inefficiency. And also the issue of corruption has not been addressed, even in this, you know, how it was put, how they attempt to address it. It's, to us, it's inadequate. So the other thing that we are saying is regarding you know, the rural areas. The NHI, it works like a medical aid. It is purchasing services. It's not going to employ doctors and nurses and all other healthcare professionals. It is not going to fix the broken machinery in the system and stuff like that, like your MRI. You're not going to procure, you know, those.
Dr. Mzukwa, do you also concur with Siviwe saying that you don't think the consultative processes were adequate? Do you also have that sentiment that your commentary was not taken into account?
It is correct. First of all, we pointed out, like she said,
yes,
we pointed out that there is no proof of concept when it comes to the implementation of or the policy at that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the pilot projects were a total failure. In fact, they even changed and said, no, those were not a pilot project. They called them something else because they failed dismally. And the other thing, what they were simply doing is taking doctors to the clinics or taking doctors to the hospitals. I mean, those are sessions that were used to. That system is known. What we thought they were going to do was to have, you know, conducting out where patients would be going to their rooms of the doctors, which has never happened. And the other thing, we've been part of this journey. From the green paper, the white paper, the policy, it itself, like you said, we made oral presentations in Parliament. And I can tell you, none of the issues that were raised were considered. In fact, when we seek clarity even from the technocrats in the department, they simply become emotional when you want details from them. They simply become emotional.
All right.
And you get all these rhetorics that you get when addressing concerns of
citizens of this country.
When I come back, I want to go a little bit into what Ayabonga was pointing out, that, look, why don't we then just talk about the regulatory matters? You know, these are things we can all iron out once the bill is enacted. Why are we having a hernia right now? I'll come back to you. DA Chief Whip Siviwe Kharube is on the line, as well as Dr. Mvuyiswa Mzukwa, who is from the Medical Association. He's a chairperson there. Ayabonga Cawe, author of Economy on Your Doorstep, also an economist. We're really unpacking the NHI. It's going to be one of those conversations. You're very welcome to be a part of it. 086-00-00959. Siviwe, I did cut in when you wanted to start responding to Ayabonga's points about the fact that, look, why don't you look separately at regulations and deal with that apart from what the Act is trying to do itself? Siviwe?
Pamela, I'm battling to hear you.
All right. Can you hear me now? I did cut in earlier when you were trying to address Ayabonga's points earlier. Let me give you that opportunity now.
Yes. So I thought Ayabonga's point is apt, in that, you know, it's very important that obviously we don't get lost in the weeds of things that can be contained in regulations. And that's completely, you know, I completely take the point. But even when we are talking about big things that are in the Act, number one, the NHI fund and the accountability mechanisms and good governance practices are not included in that Act at all. In that, the NHI fund and the management of that are linked very much to the vetted powers of a minister. I don't have to remind South Africans about what happened with Digital Vibes in the very same department with the former minister. And that it's important that when you are looking at public money, particularly of this magnitude, that you've got, firstly, you can't be the very person who appoints the board that overlooks the management of the fund, and yet there is no either parliamentary mechanism, where there can be proper oversight or checks and balances within that system. Mm. And then the second thing is, and it is important, Pamela, because we must never legislate for the leaders that are in office. We must legislate for the worst kind of person you can think of who can be in that office. So this is not a reflection on Dr. Hatla or anyone else, but we have to ask ourselves, is this good legislation? And in objectively, it is not. But I want to also just quickly address what Umpo said. What Umpo said is so true. And so many South Africans, 80% of South Africans, are exactly in Umpo's position, where they rely on the public health care system. But if we don't improve it, and we say to Umpo, once the president signs this legislation, all of a sudden you'll be able to go into a clinic, a private clinic, and get your child the hearing aid that they need, when it is not in fact true. What we need to do is we need to be honest with South Africans to say there's been an underinvestment in our healthcare system, as Dr. Mzungwa said. It's a whole system. You can't just have one lever and think it's going to fix the system. You've got to do the hard yards of overhauling the entire thing, investing, employing, upskilling, so that Umpo can be able to go to the nearest clinic, and it doesn't matter whether he goes to a mediclinic or he goes to a local clinic in his home, he can be able to get the same level of service. That's what we are asking for. And what we're saying is that there's a lot of misinformation about what this will be able to do.
Are these valid points, or are we almost throwing the baby with the bathwater here and not recognizing initially that we are trying to get to a point where we can have quality access to quality healthcare for everybody? And maybe your thoughts on that.
Well, I think, Pamela, we must caution against making a discussion aimed at informing the public a bit better about what might be in the bill to end up being about what is not in the bill. I'm quite concerned. If I listen to Dr. Mzukwa about how even in the public discourse the discussion has filtered to kind of positioning the NHI as a first class ticket to heaven. It can fix any and everything.
Mm, mm.
And I think that creates a straw man that creates a critique then that says you're not talking about this or the other.
Mm.
I think we must place into context this environment within which Dr. Mzukwa says we should have the choice and the right whenever we want to opt for the private. And I think that choice should be enshrined. But let's place it into context. Less than a fifth of the entire population in this country has access to the nature of the private health care that many people are complaining about in Section 33. Mm. Some of the issues that we're talking about this efficiency in the private sector, 2019 market inquiry by the Competition Authority, found that this sector, because of some of the challenges that the viewer raises in regulating and using legislative and regulatory power, is inefficient, is anti-competitive, and is really constituted in a very oligopolistic structure. Now, these are some of the things that you need to change, because you will never have enough fiscal resources to undertake some of the infrastructure equalization that the viewer is talking about if you do not pool all of the national resources in the society behind that particular effort. And I think some of the issues that we might want to grapple with is, what are these funding sources? It seems to me that many of the funding sources that are outlined in the bill that was signed today are existing sources, save, of course, for the surcharge on personal income tax, which it seems to me is framed around this notion of social solidarity. And I think, Pamela, we need to accept that if we want to deal with this question of asset and income inequality, if we want to deal with the labor productivity challenges, issues of infant mortality, issues of access that my brother was calling about to specialized care in many underdeveloped areas such as the former TBC homeland, then you do need a pooling mechanism, much like we have for any other risk, risk of income loss out of employment. We have the UIF, but you also in the private sector have income protection.
Yes,
And so we need to start to open, I think, our minds beyond just, I think, speaking for a particular class interest that might in many instances only account for a fifth of some of the healthcare needs that we have.
That's the fierce viewer, is it not? Which is the criticism laid against you to say, no, your only interest is capital. Your only interest is that very, very, very privileged few South Africans. You're not looking at the majority of the public, which actually is like the gentleman that called in who just does not have, that you were speaking of, who just does not have that access. I think it was important earlier on. Siviwe?
Vehemently disagree, Pamela, because in my view, I would disagree highly with that, because I don't think that this discussion is necessarily about the 15, at the very least, the motivation behind objecting to this bill has not been about the 15% of South Africans who have access to private health care. Because even with those 15% of South Africans who've got access to private health care, a lot of them are struggling to essentially keep themselves on private health care. Ayabonga makes a reference to the commission in, competition inquiry that took place.
Yeah.
And it essentially outlined that there were many problems that were there with the charging and the billing by
the
medical
private
aid
sector.
And the private sector. Of course, we've got to deal with that. But I disagree that the conversation is actually about the elite and capital. This, for me, actually is about Umpo, and who calls into your show, who says, but what about me and my child that I can't get access to good specialized care for somebody who needs a hearing aid? But that is a government failure. That is what government has failed to do for 30 years. What we are saying, what I think a lot of the criticism, whether it's healthcare workers, whether it's healthcare funders or whoever else, what we are saying is that if you're going to have a wholesale look at the system and how it works, you've got to overhaul it. But you can't take easy wins and say, we're just going to pull funds, throw money at the problem, and that should work. Because firstly, this government does not have a good track record of doing that. What we're saying is that you've got to have a wholesale approach to fixing the system. And already, where you did test it, it failed. So go back. And there's no reason for us to not support any legislation that seeks to bring about universal health care if it addresses the concerns that were raised over the past 5 years. And it frustrates me often when the ANC often equates a noble idea something as crucial as universal health care to a bill that was drafted. That bill is but a vehicle. And if the bill is flawed, it doesn't mean that we're against saying people must get quality health care. In fact, it is the very reason that we're opposed to the bill, is because we are worried about the 85% of people in South Africa who don't have access to quality health care, even 30 years into democracy.
So basically, essentially what you're going to do, you are going to go to court, and what do you want the court to do? To send it back to Parliament? Is that what you want?
Exactly. We want it sent to Parliament because we do believe that if the ANC were to drop its arrogance, Pamela, and essentially listen to not just opposition parties and other parties represented in Parliament, but also industry experts, academics, people who actually work in the system, who have taken the time to say we want to be part of the legislation-making process. We want to go back to that point and say, how can we take into consideration the reality on the ground and make a legislation, a piece of legislation that will actually change lives for the 55 million people who actually have no other choice but to go to Baragwanath Hospital, but to have their baby dying in Tembisa Hospital. Those are the people that we ought to worry about the most, because what other choice do they have? They can't buy themselves out of a bad system. And government has been delivering that, and my belief is that this is only going to get worse, and it's not fear-mongering. It is looking at the track record of government and its inability to take advice when it has been given by people who work in the system.
DA Chief Whip, thanks very much for your time. Siviwe Khorube. And Dr. Mvuyiswa Mzukwa, thank you so much for listening to all of this. Where do you take this from now? You said you're going to be considering your legal options. What ideally would you like to see happen going forward?
Like I said, we would like our concerns to be considered. Issues that we've pointed out, we have not seen them being taken seriously. And also, we've been urging even the president to say there are genuine issues that we've raised there. I mean, we've always said that we support the objective of the NHI, but in its current form, no, we don't. And we hear all the rhetoric about, the political rhetoric about why we oppose the NHI. It does not really make us, not to challenge this. So I do think that we've got a stance as the Medical Association, and we've been part of this journey, and we're still going to fight, for the proper reform.
Thanks very much, Dr. Mzukwa there from the Medical Association. Ayobaga, I want you to listen to the voice note and then we'll continue our conversation. Let's take a listen from Dumi.
Hi, Pamela. I think I agree with, I'm happy that this bill has been signed into law, merely for this one reason. You know, when you build your home or you want to renovate your house, and obviously you can't do that with people in. So bring that back to the NHI. I mean, if government is to get the health sector correct and to clean up all this mess, you can't do that while you still have pressure of looking after sick people. And if there is a way that the private sector can actually assist in alleviating that pressure while government is trying to, get the health system correct, then let it be. Right now, the private sector is prioritizing profits over health, and we cannot afford that, because South Africa needs to have healthy workforce for us to be able to achieve the things that we want to achieve. Right now, I mean, people pay almost 45% of their salaries towards medical aid, which doesn't even, cover you for almost like the whole year. You get only certain benefits up to a certain point, and then from there you are drying out, but whereas you pay medical aid on a monthly basis, and that is not correct. And worst of all, you can have medical aid and you find that you can't even access some of these specialists because their prices are so exorbitant. So it's about time that we prioritize and fix. I know it doesn't look easy, and I don't think it's an easy thing, but it has to be started. For you to get somewhere, you've got to start. It's not going to be easy, but it's got to start. So let people stop prioritizing profit over health.
Ayabonga, I don't know whether you agree with that. My sentiment is that for many South Africans, it is exactly that. Let's get it moving. We'll probably fix it along the way, but let's get it moving. Yeah. I don't know whether it's helpful to hold it all back. It doesn't seem to me like that's the helpful thing to do. Your comments on that?
I think that's precisely the point, Pamela. You can have a 10-year-long public participation process. You can have experts who justifiably should participate in the process who would feel that their voices are not heard. But I think at some point, some progress legislatively ought to be made. And I think that that is something that is important. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to say maybe two things, Pamela. I do think that the first issue is that, you know, it might be helpful for this discussion to also be had after the election, because I do think a lot is lost in the fire of the pageantry of electoral politics.
Yeah.
Why do I say?
Yeah.
I mean, even the sense that this now the boat has failed for lawmakers is a bit bizarre for me if I read the Act in Section 55, Subsection 4, which says any regulations that are made on the precise detail that is being criticized has to be tabled in before both houses of parliament, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. Mm-hmm. So this sense, even among lawmakers, that the boat has sailed, I think for me is a bit troubling. I think then the second issue that we probably need to bring into the discussion is what are the kinds of capabilities that ought to be held within the state resulting from this act. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we haven't spoken about.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for the longest time, it's actually the poor working class that has subsidized the medical schemes of the rich by medical tax credits. And we don't raise that. You know, in some instances, close to 1,000 rand per household of a subsidy to many of those who can afford, coming from the same common tax pool of the poor. So I think where that has to be reversed, certain capabilities have to be there. The first one is negotiation. Mm-hmm. Got to be able to negotiate with some of the providers from a price, service quality, and even a monitoring and quality assurance perspective. And also the contract management has to be a lot better than what we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so too, I think the data information systems, the intelligence, all of that will make the process of accrediting service providers and the relationships with medical schools much more credible.
Mm.
And I think those are the things we probably ought to focus on. It's our civic duty as citizens to kind of agitate and advocate for some of those capabilities to rest in the state. Because I certainly don't believe this idea of privatizing everything.
Well, thank you very much for that. And in fact, we will do that. Absolutely agree with you. It's not a good time to have these conversations politicking everywhere. And I fully agree with you. I think with sober minds, I think it's worth having this conversation. Thank you, Ayabonga. Ayabonga Tawe is author of Economy on Your Doorstep, also an economist. And we'll bring Sibiwe back. We'll bring others back as well, because I think it is worth having a sober conversation just outside of this time when we are all going to the election. So thanks very much for your participation as well.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.